I'd like to convene the Finance Committee, and I know my seatmate is very thorough in doing things like reading the minutes, so care to make a motion?
So move, Mr. Chair.
Okay, the motion is for us. I represent Sertich that we approve the minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. We have the Transportation Bill, House File 1351, by Representative Hornstein, first on the agenda. And we will need a motion by Representative Leader on the division report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that the Transportation or the Transportation Finance and Policy Division Report for House File 1351, first in Committee Engrossment. I move that.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Leader.
I move that House File 1351, first Committee Engrossment, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, that motion is before us. Representative Hornstein, we need to take at least one of the amendments, I think, at this point to put the bill in the order that you would like. It's a bit over the target, so do you have that amendment handy that would...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The first bill, or the first amendment to House File 1351, which would accomplish the goal that Representative Carlson would like, is the A29 amendment. And it was also drafted to include a what I think should be a non-controversial amendment. We have a few of those, but this came to us from the Automobile Dealers Association, and it deals with television screens in vehicles. Basically adding that we don't want the driver's front view impaired by a television. So I think we can agree on that. But
so that's part of your...
That's part of this amendment, just the way it was drafted. But the fiscal pieces, Mr. Chair and members, are on lines 13 and 14.
Okay. Representative Leader moves the... Is that all right, Representative Leader? But you had moved the H1351 A29 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. That then, Representative Hornstein puts the bill in the order that you'd like to present it.
Yes, thank you very much. Mr. Chairman and members, I'll just very briefly go over the contents of the bill, and then we have several amendments that have come up just in the last day or two that are of a non-controversial nature, and I know that a couple of members on the committee have a few. So I'll just go over this very, very quickly. Article 1 deals with some transportation policy provisions and contains several studies. We have at least only one in this a bill that deals with specific a specific road naming, and that's on Section 5. We have some towing and transit provisions with no costs there. We have taken out with this amendment the Section 21 under Article 3, which had some costs associated with it, as well as Article 10, the contracting provision. So the rest are just various provisions. The weight limit piece, I think we're going to be addressing a little bit today. With that, it's just pretty much straightforward policy. The process for this was to these bills were all heard in our subcommittee, the Transportation and Transit Policy Committee, and then they were moved on for possible inclusion and voted on by the full Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee chaired by a representative leader prior to the deadline. All of these provisions got at least two, and I think a couple have got three hearings along the way. So with that, if people have any quick questions, I know there's a number of amendments and some other discussion that we want to get to, but I'm happy to address to the best of my ability specific sections and process issues that members may have.
Okay, Representative Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Christian, I'm trying to recall, did this bill take a quick stop in the public safety committee? I know there's some penalties in that related to pipeline issues.
Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Coles, no. We did not have, there were no additional committees here. The public safety provisions that relate to transportation, that is under the auspices of our committee, and so certainly the appropriate people in the department were informed of these issues.
Well, if there's no further questions, we'll go to the amendments. Representative Hornstein, I have several with your name. Why don't we begin with some of those? I'll just take them in the order that they're in the packet. There's some from committee members and some from yourself or that you're apparently recommending.
Yes. If it's okay, Mr. Chair, I mean, there are a couple that are just technical in nature that Mr. Burris, our staffer from House Research, can address. Those are simple kind of fix type things. The A24, for example.
Okay, why don't you tell me which ones you want to take first? A24?
Okay. Yeah. And I'll ask Mr. Burris to address the committee on that.
Mr. Chair and members, Matt Burris of House Research. The A24 amendment is technical. It contains a number of provisions that clarify language to use active voice as a definition to clarify which commissioner is being referred to. It also makes a change to handle internal references for another definitional change. There's a little bit of cleanup having to do with what terminology is used regarding license plates instead of licenses, which in transportation is now referring to driver's licenses typically. There's a little bit of obsolete language that's also removed and a little bit of cleanup on references to which sections of law are being affected by effective dates. I can get into further details on some of the technical aspects if there are further questions. That's just a quick overview of what's being changed in this amendment.
Okay, the chair moves the amendment. Excuse me, Representative Leader?
No, I didn't know if you were going to move the amendment.
Oh, that would be better if you moved it. I didn't realize you were. Representative Leader moves the amendment, then H1351824.
Yes.
Okay, the motion is before us, then any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor then signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Hornstein, you said you had a few that were non-controversial, so let's
Thank
take
you,
those
Mr.
first.
I'd like to have someone move the A17 and A20 amendments. These are both related to the Metropolitan Council. The A17... This fixes some language that we passed a couple of weeks ago in committee. Again, I don't view it as controversial. We do have Judge Chetman from the council here if there are questions. And then it's the same would be the case for the A20 amendment. These are both agency initiatives and, again, passed without controversy.
We'll take them one at a time then. So it would be the A17 you'd like to go with first.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair members. The A17 is a issue that relates to evaluation of Met Council functions, and this is again language that was agreed on by all parties.
Your Representative Leader, would you be
Mr. Chair? I'll move the H1351A17 amendment.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you.
You said the A20 was...
Yes, the A20 would be the next one. And this is just clarifying that the Metropolitan Council is the responsible authority for future light rail the projects and also allows for the design-build method of planning and construction for those projects.
see Representative.
Chair, I'll move House File 1351 A20.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion on the motion? Representative Weston,
dealing with the design bill, what are we doing? Are we expanding it to more projects? Just very briefly, I know some of the smaller contractors often have concern with that just because they don't always have the whole package of engineers and architects to do the project.
Mr. Chair, Representative Weston, I'll have Judge Shetman from the Met Council very quickly clarify that. I think it's just language that would allow for that, but I think the Met Council did need that clarified in law, so I'll have Mr. Shetman address that directly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Westrom.
If you could identify yourself.
Oh, sure. Sorry. My name is Judd Shetland. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. And as far as this amendment, what it does, it actually was brought to us by the General Contractors Association. And what they are asking for is if the council is going to be building light rail transitways, that we go through a particular procurement process. And it doesn't apply to any particular light rail line at this point. I guess the most, the one that's being discussed the most right now is the Central Corridor, and we don't anticipate that being a design-build corridor. However, the general contractors just wanted to make sure that if we go down the path of doing something through design-build, that we follow a particular procurement. The council has no problem with that, and that's why we have this particular amendment in front of you right now. It's just to clarify.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And,
just a brief follow-up. So, Mr. Shetman, in your opinion, is there protections in there for the smaller contractors that may not have all the different service or expertise as part of their organization, or is it, aren't you even at that point of contemplating that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Westrom, you know, that's probably a better question for the contractors. I really can't speak to how that'll work out for the smaller companies. This is just, again, to deal with a particular way that we would procure that particular type of design-build project.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Shipman. Process here for the design build is just a couple of questions. Number one is that require that there be at least two people that are participating in this process, and I guess the other one is there a restriction to the 7 County Metro for the Met Council to have oversight? If you could answer those two questions.
Mr. Chair and Representative Severson, under this particular procurement process, I'm not exactly sure how that works. If you have one or two or three bidders, I'm pretty sure it wouldn't be a sole source procurement. I know that this committee and the bodies had a lot of discussion over the council's procurement of a particular bus issue that we have that has since been taken care of. But in regards to this particular procurement, I'm guessing that there would be a number of bidders, and again, the right person to talk to on this would be Mr. Murphy, who represents the general contractors. He asked us to bring this forward, and we don't see any particular problem with it at this point. As far as how it applies to the 7 County metropolitan area, that is the only area that the council has jurisdiction over, and this applies particular to the chapter that governs the Metropolitan Council. So if we were to try to do anything outside of the 7 County metropolitan area, we'd have to come to the body and get the permission first. So I think that this only applies to the metropolitan area and only those transitways that are within the metropolitan area, unless the legislature gives us that authority.
Okay, any further discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Hornstein, do you have any others then?
Yeah, a couple of more quick ones, and then I have a sense, Mr. Chair, of some that may generate a little more discussion, and so maybe we could. I just want to get the quick ones out of the way here.
That sounds like a good plan.
The next one, if someone could have a motion on the A31 amendment, this is language that is brought to us by the United Way. Simply allows, it doesn't require or mandate the Met Council to offer passes and tokens to charitable organizations. It just simply is enabling language. Again, this passed without controversy through the local government committee, but I think that United Way and others who are supporting this would like to also have an option to put this in the transportation policy bill as well.
Yeah. Representative Leader, would you?
Mr. Chair, I'll move H 1351A31.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hornstein, if it passed the local government committee, why does it have to go back into this bill? I mean, I thought you said just that's what I heard you say, that this piece just got put was passed. So, what's the why isn't it in the bill already?
I think it was just a question of a bill referral issue and leaving an option for this to be part of the larger omnibus bill. Mr. Lair from the United Way is here. I think procedurally, it's good legislation. We just want to make sure that in these last few weeks that has an opportunity to become law.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. I think the last one that shouldn't be, again, too controversial is the A32 amendment. And this relates to a provision on railroad walkways and bridges. And Mr. Qualley from the United Transportation Union is here. I think that this actually makes the bill a little more efficient in terms of what it requires. It deletes actually a couple of provisions that were somewhat controversial. So I'll let if there aren't questions, I could take them. But Mr. Qualley can very, very briefly discuss what this actually does.
Hey, welcome, and if you can identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'm Philip Qualley with the United Transportation Union, State Legislative Director. We, in the spirit of compromise, simply wanted to clean up this bill a little bit more. We've deleted the reference to vegetation as to the walkway standards, and I believe we have also taken out the piece on the bridges, and that's in the spirit of compromise, but also to assure that we do not have any issues with federal preemption. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and Representative Leader?
Mr. Chair, I'll move House File 1351A32.
Okay, the motion then is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And
with that,
Representative Hornstein.
With that, Mr. Chair, I think that takes care of a quick one. I know that there's at least two members that have amendments related to truck weights. I have one as well. And I know that there's some issues around the question of online driver education programs. The A26 is my amendment on truck weights, but I can wait on that till the committee just addresses the other amendments on that. I think that would kind of make things go a little quicker. And I know that there's several members' amendments that I know aren't controversial, such as Representative Hilty's, the A30. So whatever your pleasure at this point, Mr. Chairman.
I think the first one we'll take then, the Representative Leader has been making a number of motions. I've got an amendment here with your name on it, Representative Leader, A21.
Mr. Chair, I won't offer that amendment.
You're not going to offer it?
Thank you.
Okay. we have one then by Representative Hilty. That's the A30 amendment. Representative Hilty.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the A30 amendment.
Okay, the motion is before us. And if you'd explain the amendment.
Mr. Chair, members, the Culkin Rest Area is a rest area on Interstate 35 south of Duluth between the Barnum and Madawa exits. It was closed a few years ago in a great budget cutting exercise. It is capable of being reopened with very little effort. And there are a number of factors here. We've heard from a number of truckers that have been accustomed to using that rest area. It's the last one that's really accessible to trucks before you get to Duluth and the North Shore. So in that regard, there's a number of safety issues involved with that rest area being unavailable. And there is also the fact that this rest area was actually a gift to the state of Minnesota by the Culkin family. And at the time that that was accepted, it was accepted with the understanding that it would be named after the family and remain open. And we're simply asking here that state live up to its promise.
Okay, any discussion on the healthy amendment, Representative Stevenson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the amendment, I'm wondering if there is a fiscal note attached to this particular provision.
Representative, I didn't hear your question.
I apologize. Is there a fiscal note associated with this, the reopening? I'm just wondering if MnDOT has a an estimate for what this would cost to reopen this facility.
The health research person, as I understand it, has looked into that. Mr. Burns?
Mr. Chair, Representative Stevenson, I'm not sure what that cost would be. The way this amendment is drafted would not entail an appropriation, so it would be a agency cost that would be absorbed, but I'm not sure of the amount.
So, Mr. Chair, thank you. And Mr. Burns, so we're going to have the agency absorb it, but we don't know how much it's going to cost. I guess the next question I'd have is, what is the distance between the rest stops within this area or the stretch on 35W? Is there, you know, about 4 years ago, we had kind of a crunch in terms of the budget issues, and we said, you know, if there are stops here that aren't being highly utilized, it's to our best interest to try and be economic with the taxpayers' dollars here and try and shut down those that are not highly used. And actually, we look into going to contracting some of these things. But I'm just curious, now we're looking at some extra numbers here, and all of a sudden we're putting ourselves right back in the position where we're funding a lot of things that aren't necessarily the best use of taxpayers' dollars. And I'd kind of like to get some feedback on what is the distance between rest stops that we have on this particular stretch. And if MnDOT is available on that, maybe they could come down and comment on that.
Representative,
Mr. Chair and Representative Stevenson, I can't tell you exactly, but I would say it's roughly 50 miles. And I can tell you also that the estimated cost, and there was a fiscal note on this earlier, and I'm sorry I don't have it with me, but there has been some question about the actual costs involved here. I am told that the cost to actually reopen the area would be about $7,000, and that the cost of operating it is less than $100,000 a year. The reason that, or at least one of the reasons that I'm bringing this forward, is that I've heard from a number of rank and file DOT workers in the in District 1, which is where this is located, telling me that it was a real mistake to close this rest area because it had been highly utilized and that there are safety issues involved, particularly for truckers, if it's not available.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hilke. And I'm wondering if, you know, I guess I'm wondering what the safety issues would be associated with that. 50 miles is 45 minutes on a highway, and I don't know that 50 miles for a truck driver is kind of like a candy bar, you know. It's just not that long, and I'm just wondering what the safety issues would be related to this particular issue.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilke.
Representative Severson, the next rest area beyond that is the one at the top of the hill, Spirit Mountain, overlooking Duluth Harbor. It's very difficult to access, particularly for truckers. It involves a kind of circuitous route off of the freeway, and it's not very well laid out to accommodate trucks. And there is also that, particularly in the summer, that whole stretch of interstate has an enormous amount of tourist traffic. And I think that this is just one way that we can accommodate that. There's even, I think, an aesthetic question of having what is a major and very easily accessible rest area along the major tourist route to the whole northeastern part of the state have a bunch of concrete barriers and orange barrels set up. It's really not very inviting to tourists.
We have a representative of the department here. Maybe if you've heard some of the questions, if you could quickly comment.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Betsy Parker from MnDOT. The department has been attempting to reduce its rest area maintenance costs. There are three rest areas within about 52 miles of each other. Just south of Culkin is the Kettle River rest area. That's 26 miles south of Culkin. And the Thompson Hill rest area is about 24 miles north of Culkin. So we have three major rest areas within about 54 miles, and it seemed that we don't really need three in that stretch. The annual cost to open that rest area and keep it going is about $116,000 per year. $80,000 of that cost is for a contract for an organization called Greenview, which manages the day-to-day operations and cleaning of all our rest areas. Approximately $36,000 of that expense is actual MnDOT expense related to district office costs for repairs, supplies, utilities, lighting. So that would have an annual cost of about $116,000. We didn't think that it would seriously impact the public because there is a rest area less than 30 miles to the north and less than 30 miles to the south of it.
And if you could tell the committee which fund that would come out of?
That money comes out of the Trunk Highway Fund.
Okay. We have others that have indicated they wanted to comment. Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair and members, usually I'm not too hep on having agencies absorb costs, but with my kid being a truck driver, when you're kind of nodding off and you're out of energy drink and coffee and you're rubbing your eyes, 50 miles can be quite a distance. And so I would support Representative Hilty's amendment to open that thing up.
And Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, I strongly endorse this amendment of Representative Hilty because since this is closed, I haven't heard of an issue that people are more upset about than that people use. And the if you're going to the Iron Range rather than to Duluth, the next rest stop is with running water is the one at Evelyn. And that's a long way. Governor Perpich accepted the Coffin family's money and bequeath for this. And at the dedication of this, there was the promise of continued use of this rest stop, and it's used as a regional rest stop as well as just the ordinary people that are traveling the highway. With this rest stop is a lake and some nature trails also that were developed at the time that it was open, and so it's a good stopping off place for a sandwich and a Coke or something like that also. And there is a cost, I think, to the department talking to some DOT people in district, in my district that know of this rest stop. There is a cost of keeping it closed because there has been people going in there, even though the cones are up and says you can't go in there, because they remember the trails and they remember the lake and so forth, and they want access to that. And so they have to keep monitoring it, even though it's closed. And so I just don't think it's a good use of a facility that's there, that was accepted, that a promise was made, and is very, very well used. I could have used this Saturday morning. I needed a nap. But there was no place for me after I got north of the one just past. I really frequently stop at this place and just meander along.
And Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, I support the amendment. I think the Culkin rest stop is probably one of the busiest, Representative Severson. I have to say, in this entire great state, of all the places I've gone to the bathroom, this is one of the nicest places in the whole state to go to the bathroom.
Well, we
that I support the amendment, strongly support the amendment.
I think we're hearing from those that would be directly impacted by the facility. Is that your route? So I think the nodding is an endorsement as well by Representative Sturdy. Representative Westrum.
Mr. Chair, I'm not going to get into to necessarily debate whether this needs to be open so we have a rest area probably 30 miles or less. And I'm just wondering if there's other towns between these areas, because they probably have some places to pull off. But what if we do open it, just to tell the agency to absorb it, is that going to be just an acceptable process for other amendments coming forward? And more concerning to me that it's coming out of the Trunk Highway Fund, because that, we know, is otherwise road money. And so that would be my reservation. But what is going to be the process? Can we just tell the agency to absorb anything we want to bring forward as a policy amendment?
And you're posing that to whom?
To you, Mr. Chair, or whoever wants to distinguish why this would be an appropriate direction to an agency and the next amendment may not be.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Russell, I would also support this amendment. And I think, look, we have to maintain a certain amount of flexibility when it comes to issues that are important to individual members and their constituencies. And I think that this is a relatively small cost in the broader scheme of things. And hopefully that, you know, if it is the intention of this committee to support this amendment, and I hope it is, you know, I'm certainly willing to work as the point person on transportation policy, along with Representative Leader, to iron out some of these questions along the finances. But as a policy matter, I agree with Representative Hilty and the testimony that's been here, and we should really make every effort we can to keep this rest stop open.
And Representative Coles.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm going to just follow up briefly, and I'll be brief on Representative Westrum's point. Representative Hornstein, you might be absolutely right. This might be the right policy to do. I'm not even going to get into that debate. It sounds like from Representative Murphy and Representative Rukavina and others that it's a great facility. I'm sure I've stopped there before myself. But this is the Finance Committee. And if we're going to, I mean, if it's now the, if this committee is now going to just force agencies to eat whatever amendment we want to put onto the bills, I guess that's one thing. But Representative Westrum, since Representative Swigum is not here, I'll tell you the answer to your question is politics, Representative Westrum. You know, we've got a DFL amendment that's going to go onto this bill, and we're not going to pay for it. It's only $116,000, sure, but it's still $116,000 that we're not accounting for. And Representative Westrum, when you bring forward your amendment to open up the rest stop in your area or whatever it might be, I'm pretty sure, Representative Westrum, that the debate around the table is going to be a little bit different. So I hope I'm wrong, but I think members should vote against the amendment, not because this is bad policy, but because this is a Finance Committee, and our responsibility is to make sure that we're providing appropriate appropriations for our agencies when we're asking them to undertake expenditures.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Representative Thiessen. Yeah, I've got your name on an amendment, A070849. I'm just taking them in the order Hornstein, I think, gave them to us, or...
I was, Mr. Chair, I would move the 849 amendments, and this has to do with parking tickets, and just really clarifies what's current law, which is basically that you can put a parking ticket on a car instead of actually having to see the driver of the car who's parking there. And so it just is clarifying what I think everybody understands current law is. There's been a few weird court cases that have gotten at this issue, so I'd appreciate your support. Coming from the League of Cities.
Representative Jason moves the amendment. Any discussion? Representative Rukavina.
I'm curious again. Can you explain it again, Representative Jason? I was kind of...
Yes, Mr.
Hilty about the parking area. Call.
Representative Jason.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. This is in the area of law, the section of law that deals with parking tickets. So if you park in a no-parking zone or park next to a fire hydrant, that's the section of law we're in, and that's a ticket for the car. This is just to clarify that the traffic officer can actually place a ticket on the car instead of having to wait for the person that's driving the car to come back. I have no ulterior motives here, members, with this amendment. I'm not using this as a vehicle to do anything else, but there have been some court decisions that have said that have struck down some of these provisions. And so we're just trying, based on the League of Cities, trying to clarify that you can actually leave the ticket on the car instead of actually having to wait for the owner to come back to the car.
So, Mr. Chair, otherwise, that way the meter maid or meter guy, whatever, can keep on going and give more tickets is what's actually going to be able to happen here then.
Mr. Chair, I don't think that's the case. I think this is what everybody understands is the law right now. And there's anyway, thank you.
My liberty.
Just a quick question. I've been around town and I see tickets lined up on various windshields. I thought that was something they could do, and you're clarifying that.
Mr. Chair, clarifying that is what they can.
There's been a court case that said they could not. Is that what we're
there's been one or two court cases that have said that because our law doesn't say you can actually ticket the car, that it's been those tickets have been thrown out.
So apparently these must be recent court cases.
It was in the last month or two, yes.
Okay. Further discussion on the amendment? Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, on the page on line 2.18, is that new language or existing? It says the motor vehicle was stolen at the time, and what I'm wondering is that a sign stolen or actually stolen or proven stolen? Because right now, a lot of the times when somebody gets in a chase and they make it into the woods and they run home and with a broken leg and say their motor vehicle was stolen at the time, then they come back and they claim it and they're all beat up and there's nothing you can do about it because you didn't see them. I'm just kind of wondering, is this new language or is this, if somebody has a vehicle that gets a parking ticket, if he just calls in after he sees the ticket on there and says his vehicle is stolen, can he get out of it or does it have to be proven?
Mr. Chair, it would have to be proven, and I think in current court, under current common law right now, you could go into court, and if you can prove that you filed a police report and did all that stuff, you could. It would be an affirmative defense in court under current law. So this has not been in statute before, but it would be clarifying what I think is the practice.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Covina.
Not to this point, but I'm just going to ask Representative Cornish, tell me that you didn't get let a guy with a broken leg get away from you. you better start working out, Representative Cornish.
Okay, seeing no more or no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Leader, I have one here by you, H1351822. It has your name on it. Permit for wide load of veiled agricultural products and strikes language.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House File, or H1351822.
Okay, the motion is before us, Representative Leader.
This is actually an agricultural one. Where it allows, when they haul bales, something, type of bales they haul depends on the total height that they have with round bales. And this would provide, basically, as long as they comply with the weight limits, that they could increase their height. I think we have someone that testified in the bill.
President Hornstein.
But, Mr. Chair, I think, you know, we have several related amendments. I'll just defer to MnDOT to comment on this.
Okay, big good. Identify yourself again for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Betsy Parker from MnDOT. This is basically a technical amendment. If you look at the stricken language, you see that those width provisions of 12 feet and height provisions of 15 are in the stricken language. But existing law has different dimensions for square-baled hay than it does for round-baled hay by about half a foot. And several times we've had farmers call and ask to get a permit, and because their baled hay didn't exactly fit the dimensions in the law, we had to deny it or ask the state patrol to look the other way or something like that. And so this is just an attempt to simplify the law that already exists allowing transportation of baled hay by taking out measurements that are more confusing than they are useful, and it does not really increase the size, and it does not at all increase the weight.
Could I ask you a question, Ms. Parker, on line 2.21 of the fee for the permit is being struck? What's the fiscal impact of that then? Is that anything that's major or...
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I can't tell you how much we take in. The director of our permit office said that we issue so few of these permits that it's not worth the trouble to have the computer programs to keep track of it, and that it would be easier. Mr. Burris is reminding me that we consolidated that into another section so that it's not separate anymore. It's included in a longer section that has all the permit fees in it.
Okay, so I guess that answers my question. Any further discussion on the amendment? Representative Westrum.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Parker, just trying to quickly get the amendment straight. But Are we allowing for square bales, or is this only going to be for round bales? Because there's a lot of farmers that have shifted to large square bales, not just round bales. And secondly, it's unclear to me, are we just letting them do what's practiced currently without a permit, or is there another provision that's going to still require a permit somewhere else? And my guess is a lot of farmers from the field to the farm place are just hauling these without a permit. But can you just give me a little more clarification on, are we just targeting round bales, and what's going to be the permit process? It sounds like we might be just getting away with this seldom used permit.
Ms. Parker?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrom, we will be allowing people to transport both round and square bales of hay. And as Mr. Burris corrected me on this, we are retaining the permit fee. We are simply moving it to a new section. We are not changing the fee. So it will not prohibit anything that happens now. It will, in fact, make it easier, because farmers won't have to figure out which paragraph they fit under, and the dimensions will be the same.
One follow-up, Mr. Chair. I see the language of 35 miles from North Dakota is in there. What is that for? Or why are we just saying North Dakota, not South Dakota? Or
Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrom, I don't know why that language is in the statute. That is old language.
Oh.
It doesn't change anything that anyone can do in Minnesota now. It keeps the ability to transport a width not exceeding 12 feet and a height not exceeding 15 feet, which was provided in the language that is being stricken. So it doesn't take anything away.
So, and Mr. Chair, Ms. Parker, I think that is being stricken, so I missed that. So so this would be year-round, not just between certain dates. And Ms. Parker, last point, is the current height 15 feet, or is it, I was thinking the current height was about 13.5 for a typical reefer van or trailer like that. This would allow hay bales to be 15 feet and wider than a typical reefer trailer. What are those current measurements that we allow?
Ms. Parker?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrom, the standard height is 13 feet 6 inches, but this is an exception for agricultural products to 15 feet. Total height not exceeding 15 feet that has been in the statute for some years.
Okay.
So it is different. And I'm sorry, I apologize for my confusion about the permit fee. Mr. Burris has pointed out to me that when it was moved to the other section, it will become $60 for an annual permit, which is the same fee we charge for other annual permits.
Okay. Any further discussion?
I'm sorry, I do have one more question, because I'm thinking of different hay and forage farmers that I know. And so, Ms. Parker, if the farmer had the smaller square bales, this would still qualify for that. Granted, you probably wouldn't have as wide of a load, but if they're going beyond current provisions of 13.5 height, and I don't know what is width, 8.5 feet or something like that. If they're going beyond that, then they would need to buy the $60 permit. If they're not, they'd be just hauling a regular load like it was a load of fertilizer or something else.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrom, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any further discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Next amendment that I have on the file is H1351826. It has Representative Hornstein's name on it, and it deals with truck weights.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have several of these, several weight amendments before us, and I guess on this I would like to delete, well, actually, let's do it the more simpler way. This amendment would only be lines 12 and 14. The rest of the A26 amendment I don't want to move. Only lines 12, 13, and 14. Basically, Mr. Chairman...
Everybody follow what the motion is, and you're moving 12, 13, and 14, just those three lines? Did I understand you correctly?
Yes.
Okay. So everybody understand only part of the amendment is being moved. And do we have a maker of the motion?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Burris is indicating that... we probably also want to include lines 22. The motion actually, I'm very sorry, Mr. Chairman. The motion should be lines 22 through 1 and 2, 2.1 and 2.2.
1.22 through where?
1.22 through 2.2.
Through 2.2. Well, okay, the back side then. And you're not moving...
No, I'm only doing that the last several lines of this. 1 through 20, I'm not moving at all. Anything in there.
So, I didn't quite understand. You would like moved 1.12 through 1.14 or not?
No, that's redundant language.
Okay, so you are just moving or requesting someone to move on your behalf, then 1.22. through the balance of that page, 1.25, and then the back side, 2.1 and 2.2.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, would anybody care to make that motion? Representative Mariani makes the motion, and Representative Hornstein, if you could explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have this year, as opposed to past years, a number of truck weight issues included in this bill. And we've had some concern about that. And rather than remove those provisions or open up that discussion, I feel that one way to address that would be to say simply that we're going to have a lot more wear and tear on the roads potentially. And let's make this the truck weight provisions contingent on some additional funding. In the form of the gas fee that's being considered in various conference committees now as a way to offset some of those potential impacts. So that's all the stuff that doesn't remove the truck weight provisions, but it simply acknowledges that we're going to have additional wear and tear on the roads, and for that reason, we ought to have some additional funding in place for that.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Representative
Westrom. Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, if I heard you correctly, what you're saying is we would still allow the special weight limits for agricultural products, for garbage trucks, for other things, but we're not going to allow it if we don't raise a gas tax or something else, and then those provisions under the law would be suspended until such date?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Weston, correct. It's just the effective date would be altered, the contingent on that.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Weston, so you're saying it's just going to apply to new special weight provisions that we put into law? Any existing ones will remain the same?
Mr. Chair, Representative Webster, correct. This would really only apply to, what's currently being considered in this bill before this session. So any previous limits would not be altered at all.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, just clarify that. 2 years ago, we allowed some timber overweights up to 88,000, I believe. Last year, we allowed livestock haulers with the third axe up to 88,000. Sugar beets are covered. Potatoes, I believe, are covered. Carrots are. Milk haulers. All those previous ones that I'm mentioning and others, I mean, they would stay in existence. It's only if we're going to approve any more in the future, it's going to be contingent on a gas tax fee or gas tax increase or some sort of revenue increase.
Mr. Chairman, I must be correct.
Okay.
Correct. That is what's envisioned.
Oh,
Okay, any further discussion on the amendment? Representative Coles.
Representative Hornstein, Representative Hornstein, can you tell me why Section 10 is not included in this amendment? I mean, it seems to me that we are adding additional materials that can exceed weights related to forestry products. And that's not being included here in this amendment. Can you help me understand the policy behind it?
Well, Mr. Chair, let me call on. We have Mr. LeBeau, I believe, and some others who've been involved in this issue, and we can discuss this.
Representative Hornstein, there's a little confusion as to. The effective date here. Is the effective date when the gas goes to 30 cents or when that increase is enacted? And that comes from one of our fiscal people.
Mr. Chair, members, I think it would be after the increases that have taken effect in law. And this would follow that. This would move parallel to that.
And is that clear in your amendment then?
I think we have a July 1st, but Mr. Burris can double check. That's the beginning, I know, of the fiscal year, so presumably any fiscal changes would be completed by then.
The gentleman to your right is...
Hi, I'm Bob DeBoer, Director of Policy Development for the Citizens League, Chairman Carlson, members of the committee. The Citizens League has a strong concern about raising any weights on trucks. Our study committee from 2004 found very clearly that we have a deteriorating road system and an impending bridge crisis, and we have a lot of questions whether large trucks are currently paying their way. We very much recommend a more transparent funding system where vehicle registration would be based more on road impact. A main concern here, too, is that I believe some of these weight increases are going to affect county roads. Right now we pay about $1.4 billion in property taxes on local roads. I don't know what the impact might be there, but... we really think there's a great concern that legislature needs to step back on our road funding before having any increases in weight limits.
Thank you. Any further discussion on the amendment, Representative Westrom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein.
Oh, Representative Coles?
I'm not able to...
Excuse me, Representative Westrom. Apparently, Representative Coles wasn't done. Representative Coles.
Go ahead, Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my question really hasn't been answered. I mean, I don't necessarily... I'm not... trying to go after the timber industry here at all, but if we're going to put weight restrictions and make them contingent on the passage of the gas tax for other industries like the agricultural industry that Representative Westrom mentioned, I'm not understanding. I haven't heard a distinction yet as to why we're not doing that for the timber industry. I'm not sure that I necessarily support the amendment one way or the other, but if we're going to do it, we ought to be consistent. And so, Mr. Chair, I would move to amend the A26 amendment and add Section 10 to the effective date.
Representative,
to the Coles amendment.
And, Representative Junkie.
Well, Section 10, Representative Coles, I believe, and again I'm going from memory here, but I believe that the timber industry already has the exception, and Section 10 is simply clarifying which products are under that exception. It's not adding timber to that. Timber already has the weight restrictions, just like Representative Westrom, whoever mentioned, a number of agriculture products already have it too. So by deleting Section 10, all you're deleting is a clarification of the type of wood products that they're hauling under their current weight restriction, I believe.
Mr. Chair,
Representative
Cole. All I have here in front of me, Representative Junkin, if that's the case, I'll withdraw the amendment. But all I have in front of me, if you read the language on the bill, it says hauling raw or unfinished forest products, including wood chips. And then it goes on to add, and I'm not an expert in the timber industry, so if laminated strand lumber, hardboard, treated lumber, and untreated lumber are unfinished forest products, I'll withdraw the amendment, but I'm confused. I mean, to me, that sounds like something more than an unfinished forest product. And so that's where I have the confusion, just reading this language. And so I'm not I mean, I think we ought to be consistent here. If we're gonna put something on the ag industry, it ought to. We ought to have the same thing applying across the state. And if somebody can correct me, if I'm mistaken, I'll be happy to withdraw the amendment.
Rep. Sohornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Principals, I did have a chance to look more closely at the language Mr. Burris showed me in the bill, and it's very consistent with what Representative Junkie represented. So I think it wouldn't be affected by this.
Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw the amendment for now, but I'll look into this as we move forward, and I just want a little comfort that we're not treating it two industries differently here.
Mr. Chair, Principals, it's a good point and a point well taken. Appreciate you bringing that up.
Maybe one of the researchers can get back to you, Representative Falls, to make sure that that's clear. Then, Representative Webb.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, maybe Mr. Burris, whichever. What special requests were in this year? I'm looking at the amendments on that language, and I don't have the other language right here. Who's getting shut out unless we have a 10-cent gas tax increase? What groups are requesting some of those things? And my second question, I'll just ask it now. The language in the amendment is quite specific that a gas tax has got to go up 10 cents, not 9.5 cents, not 9 cents, not 8 cents, not 5 cents, not anything but 10 cents. It seems to me that basically we're telling those groups we're not going to give it to you with that strict language. But the first question and the second question is...
Well, I'll defer to Mr. Burris. I mean, that we have several... we've had several different bills. Representative Leader, Representative Junkie, Representative Morrow, all included different weight provisions. I think this would apply to... I'm going to find the exact section here. And I do believe there's an amendment coming that would actually alter some of this, which is non-controversial, if we want to maybe put this aside until then. I know Representative Junkie has an amendment that's going to delete some of that as well, and also all add some clarifying language. So that's another option we can take, Mr. Chair. But I'll try to answer Representative Weston's question. It is primarily ag, Representative Western. We're trying to find the exact section for you.
Okay. Well, that's fine. Maybe Mr. Chair, maybe Representative Junkie has some quick knowledge. I haven't sat on the Ag and Transportation Committee this year, so while I used to hear a lot of these, I just am not familiar with who's requesting it. Representative Junkie, I don't know if you have more insight on that.
Representative Junkie and...
Well, I don't have any more insight than that. This bill, as it sits now, expands the weight limits to all industries and all trucks. And Representative Hornstein's amendment says that goes into effect once there's a dime increase. I actually have an amendment coming up to take most of it out except agriculture, Representative Westrum. So at least we preserve that as we go to the floor, because I assume once we're on the floor, we're going to see a lot of activity to remove this entire section. So I'm kind of doing a preemptive on agriculture with my next amendment.
Okay. Any further discussion on this amendment? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Those with boards.
That's an overwhelming endorsement here. We'll try that again. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. We're going to. Just by way of announcement, there's going to be a DFL caucus. I don't know if the Republicans are getting together at 9:30 or not, but there will be a DFL caucus at 9:30. So what we are going to do, I think we'll have perhaps, this is another weight limit one. Is this going to create quite a bit of discussion, Representative Hornstein?
Mr. Chair, I think the A33 would be good timing to be Representative Junkie's. I know he just referenced it. I don't think this is controversial at all.
Okay, and then we will, I think after we take this amendment, we're going to recess on We will reconvene immediately after the session in this room to finish the bill and the agenda. So, okay, this is the junkie amendment, then, A33.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd offer the A33, and what this does, basically, this is a big topic, and I know people are looking for middle ground, and rather than have no ground, which I think is coming, and I think according to the chairs in both the Senate and the House, there's some problems with this whole section. Picking up on what Representative Westrom and others have said, this basically deletes the overweight, except for agriculture products, raw, unprocessed agriculture products. So again, as we're harvesting and moving and going to elevators and crossing state lines, Wisconsin, the Dakotas, and others have these already. You know, the fields in particular, farmers, as you move around, can be on both sides of those lines. And so I guess at this point, we'd like to at least protect that as we go to the floor and maintain that part of the weight limits. At this time, I know the chair, I believe, supports this, and I guess if we're going to do something, at least if we could do this incrementally and correct a problem that's out there at this time for the ag industry, I'd appreciate the support on this.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Hornstein.
Yeah, I've spoken with Representative Junkie and some of the ag commodity interests, and I think it's certainly appropriate for the committee to discuss this at this time.
Okay, any further discussion on the junkie motion for H1351A33? I don't remember if I read that number. Or
A33, yep.
Yeah, A33 or not. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and members, I don't sit on the Transportation Committee, so I don't want to get too deeply into this, but I'm kind of concerned. Does this amendment put weight restrictions on these roads, or is it taking all the weight restrictions off? Which one are we doing here?
Mr. Chairman, this adds overweight hauls to ag trucks only hauling unprocessed or raw material, basically a time of harvest at that point, or as you're transporting from elevator to elevator or whatever, and it does not allow then the overweight on anything else.
Mr. Chair. So, forest products, garbage, refuse.
Mr. Chairman, to that point, this only affects the new section on overweight for all. Forest products are in a separate section of law, and they already have the overweight permits, as do a number of agriculture products, as do milk haulers, as do everything else that's still in law remains. It's only the new section that they've been trying to add this year for everyone to go to 96,000 or 97,000 pounds and over the 80 that is allowed now. This only allows agriculture raw products to go to that new limit and no one else. Other than the people that are already permitted by law, I think forest products can go to 90,000 by law now. And so they're already, but they're in a different section of law than what this amendment addresses.
One more question. Representative Hornstein, now I've been here going on 9 years now, and every year we raise a limit on weight restrictions. Why do we have weight restrictions?
That's a question of Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, it has to do with the engineering of the roads. I mean, I'll defer to Representative Leader. This is his profession, and he could probably answer it probably a little better than I. It's not my ballot with. But Representative Leader, I'm kind of phoning a friend here.
Representative Leader, care to get engaged?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney. The reason is the unrestricted weights break up the roads, and there are weight restrictions based on pounds per square inch of tire width and axle spacing, and that determines the weight limits on the roads, and that's the rationale behind it.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Leader,
Mahoney.
As I said, every year we make these things higher and higher and higher, so I guess I was being a little sarcastic, and I won't ask for an answer. But I'm just getting kind of wondering why we just don't take all weight restrictions off and save ourselves some time and just destroy our roads.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, you're correct, they increased, but the rationale behind it is the only increase if they comply with what they call a configuration of the vehicles or the tire width. So technically, this amendment that Representative Junkie has less damage to the road than the existing weight limits that could be in 80,000 pounds. It's because of the configuration of the axle spacing and tire width and the whole ball wax that they do less damage, even though it's a larger weight, a gross weight.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We're about to break because in 5 minutes the DFL has a caucus across the street. Representative Hornstein, now what's the name of your division?
It's the Transportation Policy and Transit Subcommittee of the Transportation Committee.
Okay, just thought that was important for members to understand what the jurisdiction of your committee is.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, we are in recess until immediately after the...
Can we leave in here?
It's my understanding we've got the room until after session or during that, so we can just leave our materials right here. We're in recess. Okay, I'd like to reconvene the Finance Committee. The next amendment I'm mistaken as they come here, is one by Representative Solberg, A07717.
Mr. Chair, I would move the amendment, the A07717 amendment.
Yes, Representative Solberg moved the amendment. If you'd care to explain the amendment.
And Mr. Chair and members, this is one that is brought to us kind of by the Blandon Paper Company. There's two parts to it. One of them, the 9.2.4 to 2.5, it does increase the gross weight of the vehicle. If it has seven axles, that's a newly designed truck that they would have for hauling the continuous rolls of the big rolls of paper from Grand Rapids to the Duluth area. In order for them to meet that weight, they would have to have these specially designed trucks with specially designed brakes on them. And the second part is the effective date of the current law, which would permit them to start on August 1st with this type of new trucks. And I think that the authors support the measure.
You represent Bob.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. We did hear this bill, actually, and I think in a broader scheme of the weight conversation we had this morning, I think it's acceptable to put in the bill at this point.
This one fall into that category that Representative Leader described, wider tires and the different. You referenced the additional axles, so I think that was what he indicated would be an important criteria.
Mr. Chair, there's also one additional thing, and that's on, I should point out, the 118 and 119. They have negotiated over the last couple of years with the MnDOT on what kind of bridges would also hold this kind of weight for them, and they have done that in the past, but there's also a stretch of highway that the city of Duluth requested that they consider on from... And it's a new underlying highway, 194 between 53 and 2, so they could go down 53, then over 194 to 2 and down.
Okay. Any further discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Mariani is not here. I have another one. I guess I am passing over a Phil Westrom had one. He's not here yet. One by Mariani, who will be here shortly. The next one, I have Hornstein's name on it. It's, I'm told Mariani will... Is Otremba here? Okay, Representative Kahn, you had two oral amendments. Why don't we take those while we're waiting for a couple of people?
Okay, I think these are really simple, and I've spoken to the author about it. The first one is on page 14, line 16, and this is on motorized foot scooter. and I've spoken to one of the people who sells these in Edina, actually, and the models that they need, the safest models that he sells have a 12-inch wheel, not a 10-inch wheel. And we modified the language for them last year by putting the either-or, and if you take the either-or, he's okay if you just make the 10 into 12. So I would strike 10 and replace it with 12 on line 16.
That's page 16?
Yes.
Line 16?
I'm sorry, page 14, line 16.
Oh, page 14, line 16. Okay. Could you repeat that?
Page 14, line 16, strike 10 and replace it with 12. So the wheels can be, the engine is no bigger, but the wheels are 2 inches bigger. It's an issue that I worked on last year with Mike Beard, and since it's the only issue we've ever worked on together, we feel sensitive about having it done right.
Okay, Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, members, I think Representative Kahn is an excellent authority on all things bicycle, and I would follow her lead on that.
And it sounds like she was referencing another authority that made the recommendation. So, okay, any discussion on the Kahn amendment? Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Will this have an extra axle for extra heavy people? Right?
Not, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kahn, you don't always have to yield to the question, okay, but yeah. Representative Kahn.
Not by this amendment.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. It was indicated you had another amendment.
Yes. That's online. I chastised the author of the bill for having nothing in the bill about bicycles. And so on page 24, line 7, the plan shall incorporate all modes of transportation. After transportation, so page 24, line 7, insert the phrase, including bicycle, commutation, and recreation. And that's okay with the author, too, I believe.
Could you repeat that again?
After transportation on line 7, it would say including bicycle, commutation, and recreation.
Okay, we have it. So Representative Kahn moves the amendment. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This section of the bill and statute does deal, you know, with various transportation modes and environmental impact, energy efficiency, so it would be very appropriate to insert that here. And bicycles, pedestrian is transportation as well, so I accept this amendment.
Okay, any further discussion? Hearing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. This one has your name on it, Representative Hornstein. Yeah, is Representative Mariani not? Oh, he is here now. I didn't see him behind Representative Hornstein. Okay, now we can. I think a couple of these coming up, Representative Mariani, were yours. The one in my hand is A16.
Mr. Chair, I would move the A16 amendment.
Okay, that motion is before us. Do you care to explain the amendment?
Mr. Chair, members, and I listened carefully to your advice before we recessed, and I will confess that I would rather not do this amendment on this bill, but here's the deal. This is a bill that I introduced that was passed through Representative Mullery's committee and was placed on the House floor. Actually, a couple of members on the other side of the aisle approached me and said, you know, well, there's reference to public safety here. Perhaps you should have Representative Leader hear this bill. And so I agreed, and Representative Leader agreed to give that bill a hearing. Unfortunately, what happened, members, is that we started running up pretty quickly against our tight deadlines. And so the bill itself, even though it's been passed through the floor, is kind of caught up in between committees. We're trying to catch up with Representative Hornstein's bill as it came out of Representative Leader's bill and didn't quite get the timing down for it. And so this is really my last opportunity to do that. And very quickly what it does, members, this deals with the Real ID Act of 2005. And in essence, the act, it's a congressional act that creates a de facto national ID card. It, in essence, you'll have a uniform U.S.-wide driver's license card. And in addition to that, there's an expectation that that card will then, and all the information that's collected, because it also expands the kind of information that normally gets collected for driver's licenses, that all that information would then wind up on this huge national database, which to this date still doesn't exist. So the act imposes federal technology standards and verification procedures for every state under state driver's licenses. So it prescribes what the licenses are going to look like, what information is collected, how that information is verified, how that information is stored, and how eventually it could be read. And there's several issues that the Real ID Act raises for me. One is cost issues. It's frankly a pretty large, unfunded, largely unfunded federal mandate. I asked our public safety department to give me numbers, and they shared with me that Minnesota estimates would be that this would compliance with this act would cost us $10.3 million one time, and then an additional $4.2 million over the next 4 years for a total of a little over $21 million. There is some federal money that's available, but Congress has authorized a pittance compared to the billions of dollars that are expected to be expended over the course of the next few years by all the states. In addition, there's a number of privacy issues that that the Real ID creates. There's a ton of information that's going to be collected, as I mentioned, and put on a database. With the possibility of that expanding over time, information over and above what we currently collect for our driver's licenses. And then there are security issues tied to that because, as you can imagine, there's one big database, and so it means that, you know, some fellow in Florida can probably hack into the database and get Representative Cornish's information available on this database. And then there are huge implementation issues that this also raises for all our motor vehicle licensing bodies around the country. The department expects that there will be need for more staff, more training, more storage procedures and equipment because of the greater number of information gathered, the verification process of verifying all that information. And so, in essence, creating kind of a larger bureaucracy. Now, I'm told the Minnesota driver's license is actually pretty good. In many ways, it already conforms with some of the big expectations of Real ID, except for this big, you know, gathering of information and verification process. But it's a pretty secure driver's license, and it already meets the residency rules that are expected in the Real ID Act. Two other states have passed memorials along these lines, not the same, but along these lines, Maine and Idaho. Eight other states are currently have legislation currently pending where bills have passed in at least one chamber. They frankly tend to be a lot of our western neighbors, and I think there's something Representative Hornstein about a libertarian streak out west. So Arizona, Montana, New Mexico, Utah, Vermont, Washington, Wyoming, and then Georgia in the southeast. There's been grave concern expressed by this by the National Gun Association, American Bar Association, the Gun Owners of America, NCSL, the National Taxpayers Union, NOW, National Organization of Women, ACLU. There's no punishment to a state by not complying to the Real ID. We're not going to lose funds. We're not going to be sanctioned. However, in full disclosure, what the Act says is that any state that doesn't comply with it runs the risk of the federal government not recognizing that state's driver's licenses which means that our individuals would not be able to board planes or obtain passports or access services at places with federal jurisdictions like a post office. It's not sure whether, particularly with the new Congress, whether they're going to be serious about that, but that certainly is a possibility. Members, I think it's really important that we send a really strong message back to Washington, D.C., one, about unfunded mandates, and two, about not so much, you know, the security aspects. I think we can all agree on making our driver's licenses more secure. And as I said, our state has done heads and tails above other states in that regard already. But this whole massive collection of data and storing it into a database that still does not exist, many of the rules and regulations have not been promulgated on this act. I think it's really important for us to send a strong message back that there's a better way to do this and this isn't the way to do it. So members, that's basically it, and I would encourage your support. As I mentioned earlier, Representative Hornstein, I wouldn't do this to your bill otherwise, but you know, it was on the floor of the House before, and we kind of got snagged with the time thing, and your bill offers, I think, a good vehicle and a fair vehicle for us to have a further debate on the floor of the House and at least send a strong political message, if nothing else, to the federal government in this regard. So, Mr. Chair, I apologize for the length of my presentation, but that's basically it. I appreciate your support.
Okay, Representative Mariani has moved in the amendment H1351A16. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I think that Representative Mariani gave a compelling presentation. I've never seen a coalition that had the gun owners and the National Organization of Women on the same side of an issue, and I think it's appropriately in a transportation bill since we have some jurisdiction over the Department of Public Safety, certainly the driver's license, driver and motor vehicle division, et cetera. So I think it's certainly very germane to this bill, and I appreciate Representative Mariani bringing it forward.
Okay, any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Representative Botrimba, we have an amendment with your name on it here that's A070823.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a bill that came up after the untimely death of Senator Sams, and I had asked for a hearing, but it was too close to the deadlines, and it didn't happen. The Senate bill is a standalone, and it's already on the consent calendar or the register. So I would appreciate your support.
Okay. Representative Tremba moves the amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. I don't have much to add, Mr. Chair and members. We had a very untimely and unfortunate death of one of our very, very esteemed colleagues, and again, the timing issues, I think, played into this. The Senate has it. We should have it in the House, and I appreciate Representative Botrimba bringing it forward.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Mariani, we've got another one by you. This one is H1351A23.
Mr. Chair, I will move the A23 amendment.
Okay, the motion is before us. There's apparently a handout that, it's not by Representative Mariani, but it's Minnesota Driving School Association apparently requested a handout to be distributed. So if the pages have that one, they can distribute it. Representative Mariani has moved the amendment. Representative Mariani, if you'd explain the amendment.
Mr. Chair, quite simply, this would strike the online driver's ed proposal in the bill. I know a number of you, I suspect, have gotten a bunch of phone calls and emails and perhaps even visits in the last week or so over this from a number of teachers and driving schools AAA and some others. My goal here, members, isn't to debate the merits of the online driver's ed bill. I think it was offered in good faith and was discussed in Representative Hornstein's committee. However, it didn't make it to my the committee I chair, which is the Ed Policy Committee, and that's probably my bad. I should have been watching out for that, but I didn't. And there are a number of issues that are raised here in regards to offering this alternative for driver's ed that I think warrant review by the Ed Policy Committee. There are grad requirements that are tied to driver's license courses. A number of these driver's license courses are offered in such a way where teachers are reinforcing and screening for literacy skills. We obviously want to have drivers who can read and write. They're also working with young people in a way where they're able to judge attitudes. We have trained, licensed, certified teachers who are able to interact with young teens in terms of looking out for judgmental or judgment attitudes that they might consider not to be in the best interest of the public in terms of safety issues, and so they're able to interact with students directly in that regard. And so all that by way of saying that I think there's a strong interest, I certainly would have a strong interest in seeing this bill in our committee and vetting it through our committee. There are members of my committee who feel the same way. I apologize for not catching it sooner, but I think it's an important issue that we do want to catch it, and I certainly will commit myself to having a hearing on the bill next year so we can vet out some of those education-related issues in regards to this bill. And so the motion here would be to eliminate the portions of the bill, of the Hornstein omnibus bill that has this particular piece. There is the freestanding bill, and I would be encouraging the author to have it re-referred over to my committee, and we'll have a hearing on it next year. I don't think there's a real rush, frankly, to do this policy change at this time. So, members, that's what the amendment would do, and ask for your support.
Representative Simon. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is my bill, or my provision, that Representative Mariani is seeking to strip out of the bill. I would just say this. I have a few things to say on it, because if the bill is going to die, I'd like to give it a proper eulogy. If it's not, I'd like to at least talk about the merits of it. I am disappointed at this amendment, and Representative Mariani, I respect you a great deal. Everyone I know who serves on your committee respects you a great deal. But in the future, I really would ask that you talk to me first. I heard from someone else the other day that you were planning to do this, and all the while was expecting you to come to me, and I expect better. So I hope in the future you'll do that. I hope any member will do that. I think I'm owed that courtesy, as is every member, and you didn't do that. I'm also disappointed at some of the other folks who are in opposition to this, although I understand it. And they're friends and allies of mine. We aren't always going to agree. Sometimes we're with one another 90% of the time, just not the other 10%. This is one of the 10%, and I think you know who some of those interests are out there, and that's okay. We're going to have to agree to disagree. But I am disappointed by that opposition because I think it's short-sighted. Let me just describe to you my perspective on the bill, or I guess this provision of the bill. This basically says that online driver education for the permit portion only is on the menu. That's it, folks. There's not a single cost to the state. It's not a mandate. It's just an option. A quarter of the United States is currently under this regime, Texas, California, other states, and they haven't seen the kinds of problems that we're being told we might expect here. So if it's good enough for the rest of the country, or much of the rest of the country, I think having it on the menu, that's it, on the menu as an option for kids, ought to be okay. Keep in mind, members, that homeschool kids already have this option, or something near it. That is, they are exempted from the 30-hour permit classroom requirement. They are already exempted from doing it in a classroom or at a driving academy or with a school. So we already have folks who aren't taking it the conventional way, the homeschoolers, and this was just extended to other people. Keep in mind, folks, that any young person who seeks to become a driver already has to pass a permit test. That's something given by the state. No course, no curriculum can substitute for that. They have to know the difference between a white line and a yellow line, and they have to pass a permit test. Then they already, and under this bill, will still have to take 6 hours of behind the wheel. Have to do it. No ifs, ands, or buts, including the homeschool kids.
That won't change under this bill. All this says is for the permit portion only, before they take the permit test, it's on the menu. It's an option, like those other states. They can take it online. Now, I will tell you, and she's not here right now, but Representative Hausman and Representative Holberg, who's not on the committee, on this committee, but Representative Hausman, she's just not here. The story of this bill, members, is it passed unanimously, Representative Hornstein's committee, nearly unanimously. I think there were two audible dissents in the full committee that Representative Bernie Leader runs. And there was a presentation at that point given before one of the committee by some of the folks who run these online driver education programs. And two members, I didn't put them up to it, they came out on their own, said, I couldn't have scripted it any better as an advocate for the bill. Both Representatives Hausman and Holberg said something to the effect of, gee, when I walked in the room today, I thought, online driver's ed, I'm not going to do that. But they both said, after seeing this presentation, I'm sold, I'm voting for it, and they did. One thing that's been really popular in other states is what it does for rural kids. Because often in rural areas, people have to drive a long, long way to go to driver's education. It may not even be offered in their school, and this is a way for them to get that kind of training at a low price. And I point on, too, I don't want to bury you in paper, but I did compile a little handout here, and this kind of sums it up in terms of the safety, in terms of the benefits. I'm not going to repeat all that. You can read for yourself. But basically, it's on-demand learning. The studies and the demonstrations elsewhere show that some kids, not all by any means, but some kids do learn better this way. They just do, and I think that's a fact. But it's not for every kid. And some of the compelling arguments I hear by those who are opposed to it, whether it's the folks who currently run some of the driving schools or others, perhaps public school teachers, those are great arguments for why a kid or a family wouldn't choose this option. They're really not very good arguments for why it shouldn't be on the menu at all. I think parents and kids are smart enough. If they think they need the classroom, they're going to go to the classroom. But the online option provides a very real, very viable alternative. The one thing that always comes up, and it's a very legitimate point, when I was first approached about authoring this, I had the same question, is what about the kid who logs onto a computer and goes and makes a sandwich or goes and plays a video game or leaves the house altogether? Isn't that going to happen? Aren't we going to have kids cheating? But what convinced, I know, Representative Holberg and Representative Hausman were the security features in play here, and I can't recreate the presentation for you. Suffice it to say that there are, every few minutes there's a box apparently that flashes, and the kid has to type in certain personal information, social security, mother's maiden name, whatever it is, for it to continue at all. And, you know, yes, could a kid tell his or her friend all that information? Sure, it's possible. But it's also possible, as happened when I took driver's ed, that you'd have kids in the back of the room passing notes and throwing spitballs and not listening at all. That's possible, too. I'm not saying it's common, but it's certainly possible. So I see this as just an option, and an interesting option, I think. The other key thing in the bill, members, or in this portion of the overall bill, is this requires Department of Public Safety approval. No one's going to do anything with this whatsoever until the Department of Public Safety puts its stamp of approval on this. You're not going to have kids careening out of control and cheating and not getting the education that they need. It hasn't happened in other states, and I really don't think it's going to happen here because the Department of Public Safety simply wouldn't approve some fly-by-night operation that's going to kill kids. I mean, that's really kind of overwrought and, an exaggeration. To the process point, Representative Mariani, I've heard that sort of belatedly come up, well, they should have gone to the Education Committee. I just respectfully disagree. My understanding, and I just learned this yesterday, is in the last 10 or 12 years, no driver's education-related provision has ever gone to the Education Committee. That's my understanding, because although schools do it, it's not something that necessarily has to be done in the school. I mean, I know I was at a school the other day that has a jewelry-making class, but if we were to have a jewelry manufacturing regulation bill, that wouldn't go to your committee, or swimming lessons, or other things that are provided in schools, sometimes by public school teachers. Well, I think that there's an argument, certainly a good-faith argument, to go to your committee, no question about that. I don't think it would have to go to your committee, so I don't think it necessarily would have to, although as a chair, obviously, you're entitled to just some respect in that regard if you wanted to see it, but I don't think, as a general matter, it would have to go. I wanted to point to your attention, members, something in the packet, and this to me, a picture speaks a thousand words. It's page 3 of the double-sided pages of the packet. I couldn't make this stuff up if I tried. Apparently, in the Minsky system, you can take an online course to learn how to teach driver's ed. That's okay. So if you want to teach driver's ed, here it is, Minnesota Online, that's all right. If you want to teach kids how to drive, that's just fine in Minnesota. But we're all excited and worried now because kids themselves might have the option, not a mandate, the option of learning how to do driver's ed online. It's just disappointing to me the level of the opposition here. But I understand it, and I want to be sensitive to it. I don't want to mock the opposition. I understand there are people out there worried, frankly, about losing their jobs, and that's a serious thing. We wouldn't want to lose our jobs. So I don't want to mock it or laugh at it. It's a serious thing. But my understanding is that hasn't happened in other states. I don't, with all due respect, think that driving schools, private driving academies will go out of business. I don't believe that public school teachers will be laid off and that schools en masse will lose market share. And my understanding is that hasn't happened in other states. So I personally don't have that worry, but I respect that worry. I point out this as an irony, but I want to be respectful of people who really are worried and nervous, not only about their own positions, but to be fair about the kids. They are worried about the kids, and they think that this will be some sort of fly-by-night way of substandard driver's ed. So I want to be respectful of the opposition, although I'm disappointed in it. There are legitimate concerns. I think the concerns are not well-founded, but generically speaking, caring about kids, that's fine. Caring about your own job, that's fine too. I just am not convinced that that's going to happen under this bill. And I understand how member-based organizations work. I mean, if enough members of your organization, dues-paying members, are grousing about something, you have to go fight for them. And I think that's what's happening here today, and I understand it, and that's democracy. But I just happen to respectfully disagree. So I guess I would say this. Members, you can read the items here in the packet for yourself. Before I finish, one of the folks on the opposite side of this issue did point out to me, and I said I would mention this on the record, there are a couple of potential inaccuracies in what I've given you, and I apologize, I just didn't know. There's one email, I included some emails in the final couple pages, one from Debbie Prudhomme, I think it's the third to last page, that implies, but now that I read it, barely implies that AAA is for this. That's not true. AAA has taken the position. I met with them recently, they're against it. Although I will tell you that my perception was they're more against the timing of it than the concept. Without disclosing too much of our confidential conversation, I think the idea is that this is an idea whose time may come soon, but maybe we ought to wait for more studies and that sort of thing. They can speak for themselves. So it's not that they're hell-bent on defeating this idea for all time. The email, as I read it, is barely an implication that they're supporting them. I think what she's saying in here is that these are where her driver's education schools are located. It's also been brought to my attention that on the bullet points on this Debbie Prudhomme email, a couple of these driver schools that were listed as supporting the idea have now switched and now oppose it. So I can't remember which they were, but I want to be honest here. Those were brought to my attention. And just so you know, AAA does not support this measure. I want to be honest about that. And apparently a couple of the driving schools here are now not on the support list, if they ever were. So with that, I just want to sum up by saying what's in this bill, which passed unanimously and nearly unanimously through two committees, is just a menu option. It's a menu item. That's it. It's not a mandate. There's zero cost. And, you know, it's an interesting new frontier. And, you know, members are going to do what they're going to have to do. I know there's been an organized attempt by driving academies to oppose this. You've all gotten the emails, and I understand that some members are in a tight spot, but I wanted people to understand why I brought this bill forward. I thought it was an interesting idea, an interesting experiment, and of course I would never do it. I thought we were going to kill kids, fire teachers, and close businesses. It's not my idea of good policy. I just think it's an interesting idea, an interesting experiment. That's why it's in the bill. Thank you.
Okay, we've got six people that have indicated, five that have indicated that they would like to question their comments, and then we'll be hearing from the author of the bill. At some point, Representative Rukavina.
Well, Chair, first of all, Representative Simon, I hope someone gives that nice eulogy at my funeral. I hope they can find that much to talk about.
I want plenty to talk about.
Nice.
Thank you, Representative Connie.
You're in the same boat as me, but anyway. I want to say this. I'm sure you were well intentioned, but I don't think anything substitutes for classroom experience in an educational setting and interchange and question and answer and things like that. First of all, secondly, your argument about homeschoolers—they're exempt from doing anything in the classroom. So, that's third. Rural kids. I look around this table and I would say that. Representative Solberg was probably driving the tractor at the age of 8 or 10. And
Horses.
Let's see, Representative Swiggum, how old were you, Representative Swiggum, when you were on the tractor? You know, I know my kids were on the tractor when they were, you know, 12, 14 years old. I don't think rural kids, you know, that this is going to help them at all. And finally, your statement about parents being smart enough, I think yesterday in the Senate, parental intelligence lost out in that provisional driver's license. So we'll see how you vote on that one, Representative Simon, because, you know, it keeps being more and more restrictions. I don't want to get into a debate on that particular bill, but I want to support Representative Mariani because I think the system we have right now is an excellent system and works well and serves both our safety on the highway and our students well. So I hope you'll support the Mariani amendment. But Representative Simon, I want you to give my eulogy. It could be soon the way I've been feeling.
Representative Okremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have, I think a couple of years ago and maybe even last year, a number of parents actually came to me about this issue of why can't we do it online. The homeschoolers already do it. And for your information, Representative Rukavina, they are overseen by superintendents, and if they don't have degrees, they have to quarterly to turn in their grades. The closest driving school to us is 30 miles. And so we have more and more teenagers not getting a permit at 16, but at 18, because it's cheaper. You don't have to take one of those, quite frankly. We have no public transportation in this county, and so they can't get on a bus or a train and go to a driving school 30 miles away. I've talked to the advocates and asked if we couldn't find some commonality, because it is an issue that they are not able to afford. You know, they're sometimes $300, $400, $500, and they can't afford it. And so looking at something that you could do on the internet or online, 55 Alive already does it online. It's an option. It's probably not the best, but that's what's happening in some of our rural areas there. And then we have one school in my whole county that offers it as a class. So kids are now they're open enrolling to that school because that driving school, so to speak, as a teacher, is free. So we're losing students from all these other schools going to an open enrolling thing, and that then the school buses pick them up and take them there. So I realize it's not ideal, but I certainly would like to talk. I mean, I've talked about this to the advocates. I have not heard back to see what we could do, but there really are rural areas that are like that, and there really are a lot of kids out there that are 18 and because they can't afford the permit. I shouldn't say the permit, but the actual driving school curriculum. So I understand that it's probably better with a teacher, but what do you do? So these kids drive without that because they have to get where they have to get. And I would hope that we could come to some sort of compromise, because these driving schools are not everywhere. And a lot of them can't afford the $400 or $500 or even $300 to take those classes like they used to be in the school. So I think we have to look at it with, you know, now we've talked about maybe some entities doing scholarships, but it's a reality in my community, and it has been for a long time. And last year even, they were really saying, why can't we do this like the homeschoolers do? I mean, these are good parents that have jobs that really don't have time to take, or it costs money again to go 30 miles and take a day off because it takes a while, and then come back. So I totally respect what you're doing, Representative Mariani. I didn't know who was the chief author of that, but I'm still trying to be kind.
You know, I think maybe we need a little clarification here. It's my understanding that there's two levels of instruction when we're talking about driver's education. There's the classroom experience preparation for the written test, and then there's the behind the wheel. Mm-hmm. And just so we clarify, so I was picking up on what the Representative Otremba was talking about with the cost, and I assume that that's behind the wheel you're referencing when you say $300 or $400.
Well, actually, Mr. Chair, there are costs to it, and they're pretty expensive costs, depending on who the driving school is or where they're located. So it's not free.
So you were talking both, or you were talking classroom instruction for the written test as well. Okay, I just wanted to clarify this so I personally understood it. Representative Cornish.
Just real quick, Mr. Chair, members, I support the Mariani Amendment because, basically, because a good friend is an instructor that I know, and he's elderly and not worried about his job. It's not a job thing. He believes it has to do with safety, and right now we're trying to get more control on and young people's driving, and I think anything we do, like online, take away from classroom instruction would probably hurt that effort, actually, more than help it, and so I'm supporting you.
And then we have Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, members, and let me just state to you, Representative Simon, that I owe you an apology, and I apologize in public here. You certainly do owe the respect of a direct conversation, and whatever reason I didn't do that, and you've always been very direct with me on the other way, so I do apologize to you. Members, I am, however, willing to eat crow because I think it is important for the Education Committee to review this. There are, in fact, graduation requirement possibilities available to students by virtue of taking these courses. I spoke earlier about how some of these courses have been a good way, at least it's been communicated to me by teachers, is a good way to do some screening on literacy issues. And then we've heard a number of people talk about the quality of interaction between certified, accountable teachers and students. This year in the E-12 bill that we passed off the floor last week, Representative Anseltz had some terrific work that he's been working on in terms of tightening online learning in general. We think that within that vein, it's appropriate for our committee to be able to review this. I don't really want to debate the issue. I think Representative Simon has raised some important issues, and I've learned a few things here. But for me, members, frankly, I think it warrants a review from the Education Committee. It's unfortunate that I didn't act sooner to make sure that happened. I apologize to all of you, but I do think it's important for our Education Committee to review this proposed policy, and would urge you to support the amendment.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mariani and Representative Simon, I agree with some of the points that both of you made. And I don't really know. I really believe that any community education class or group that offers driver's ed as part with a real live teacher and real kids in the community, that the majority of kids would go to that. But if they did choose to go online, do you have a prescription for the online course, or is any company that creates an online course acceptable, or is that a decision that Department of Public Safety makes?
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Berkey, my understanding is that the Department of Public Safety would have to sign off. I thought you were asking about the cost first. You weren't asking about the cost.
Well, no, I think that
they have to be affordable, and that would have to be in line with the community education, driver's education class, or whatever, whoever's teaching the drivers, or a private business that's offering it. I would imagine they have to be competitive prices, and I imagine the online one would also have to be competitive. Otherwise, it's not going to survive. But is the Department of Ed, do you see that, Mr. Chairman, Representative Simon, do you see that the Department of Public Safety will make a menu of online courses available for your menu?
Representative Simon. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Murphy. The idea is, I think, company by company, they would have to approve. I don't know that they would be in the business of promoting it. Incidentally, this is a good time for me to mention, you know, unfortunately, members, I had offered a couple compromises here. I hope members understand that. But I was told, with exception of AAA, which was wonderful to deal with, the others basically said no to the compromises that I offered. Pilot project, study, anything. The answer was no. And I'm very disappointed in that, and I would expect that regardless of what happens today, the answer is still going to be no, and that's really, really a shame.
Do we have Representative... Representative Murphy, were you done? Okay, then we have Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, first of all, I didn't quite understand what Representative Cornish was saying. He was saying there were problems with the kids learning how to drive, and those problems clearly haven't been brought on by online classes. Those have been brought on by these classes that we're trying to preserve. You know, this is one of the things that we do have a complete outcomes management, because the first thing that happens is that they have to take a test, and so you can actually start to see right away how it works. And I just, from just watching my own kids and now watching my grandkids, there were certain people who do a lot better, concentrate a lot better with online online classes, and I'm going to support the Simon position.
And Representative Westphal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think some of my questions have been answered, but I want to just clarify Representative Mariani's amendment. But Representative Simon, you had said this is just the instructional portion, not behind the wheel, because some of the correspondence I've gotten, it at least has been a question in my mind of whether they're talking about trying to do a virtual reality online driving test or not. You're saying it's not. This is just the instructional part of the of the items you would learn in the classroom. You have to pass a test after you've studied the issue online. Is that right,
Simon? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Westphal, that's true. It's only for the permit portion. And moreover, it doesn't replace the state test. The person, kid, still has to pass the permit test administered by the state, and then has to do behind the wheel, actual real human being behind the wheel for 6 hours, and then has to pass that test to the driver's license.
So the online, Mr. Chair, some of these same, I mean, where is it going to be done? A driving school would be a logical place. Some new instructor that's gotten their certification online may be able to do it. The current ones teaching it could start an online course in their school. I mean, those are all options that would be envisioned under your bill. Is that correct?
Simon. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Westphal, yes. My understanding from how it works in other states, California and Texas among them, is that most kids opt to do it from home if they have computer access, but it's something that I understand a student could log into from multiple locations.
Okay. Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure what the fate of this amendment is going to be or not. Mr. Representative Simons, I've heard a lot from, a lot of the emails were out of my district, one or two or a couple of them have been from people that I know in my district that teach this, and so I hear what you're saying in some of your discussion, and I hear where they're maybe concerned. I'm wondering if down the road, maybe if a pilot project authorizing the department to coordinate a pilot project would be a better first step position, and that's just a friendly suggestion as it might be in territory we haven't plowed, but let's see what happens with the amendment here. But it seems somewhat logical that in certain applications an online test or training would work. We've done it with lots of other things, but of course I haven't been on the committees that have heard the issues, so we don't flush them out here quite as much as we do in their basic committees. But just a thought, or maybe a pilot project to the advocates, to all the groups out there, if this passes or doesn't pass, maybe that's a better spot for everybody to try to get more comfortable with.
Representative Simon, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Westrom. I agree. I've suggested that, and in the packet that I gave you on the front, there are two blurbs, two quotes. The second of which comes from something that California did, a study, 2003, entitled "The Effectiveness of Home Study Driver Education Compared to Classroom Instruction: The Impact on Student Knowledge, Skills, and Attitudes." Sounds like a great title for a study that we might do in Minnesota. And I suggested it. I didn't suggest that exact language, to be fair, but I suggested, hey, how about a study? And in no uncertain terms, that was rejected out of hand. So, you know, would I be open to that? Absolutely. Representative Pepper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd like to add to the debate as well. I grew up in an area not very far away from where Representative Otremba represents. And I have to say that I was quite a ways away from the driving school. And I remember it was kind of a poor area, and a lot of the kids... there were a couple different problems with the driver training. One of them was the cost, and there is certainly a cost. I don't know what it is, but there's a cost associated not only with the behind the wheel, but certainly the classroom training. So I would say if there's a way to do this where you could get more kids involved in an appropriate time in their lives, I think that would be good. Another problem that we had then, of course, that was 20 years ago. Maybe this has changed. But even back then, there was a problem with demand. So a lot of my classmates couldn't actually do it the semester that they wanted to do it. They'd have to wait, and which is a real big problem when you have kids who live 20, 25 miles away from school, like I did, and it's hard for parents to have to drive their kids back and forth. So it was a real struggle for me to even get through the program because I had to basically hitchhike rides to get to the driver training course, and obviously online wasn't available back then, but I think that there are certainly merits to putting this on the table. So I would be opposed to the Mariani provision, and I'd be supportive of the legislation that Representative Simon has put forth.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was in on the hearing, both hearings actually, that had this provision, and I didn't have an opinion one way or another as we went into it. But as the gentleman presented the presentation at the committee hearing and went through the process of the online learning, it became very evident that there isn't some of this conceptual thinking that you can just get on, do a whole bunch of other stuff, and then come back and successfully complete the curriculum. It just wasn't built in the program. They have accountability in this program. And I think one of the other issues that goes to the core of this is choice. You know, parents deserve to have the right to have a choice in this particular issue. It isn't mandated. And it's a great option, I think, for parents who are particularly, as Representative Tremble was talking about, are remotely located. And I think it's a great provision, and I would support keeping it in the bill.
Okay, Representative Orenstein, the author of the bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think Representative Simon accurately summarized the process in committee, but since that time, we did have quite a bit of concern raised by various stakeholder groups since then. And, you know, at this point, this is a decent cross-section of different interests here. I would leave it up to the committee in terms of your preferences, and I'm certainly respectful of Representative Mariani's interest in seeing it in the Education Committee. So, you know, I think it's been a great debate. I think everyone's been upfront and accurate in their presentations, and leave it up to the committee to sort this through.
Okay, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed?
No.
Chair is in doubt. All those in favor of the amendment by Representative Mariani, raise your hand. And opposed. The motion carries 13 yes and 12 no. Next amendment also involves, oh no, we've got one more here. Representative Westrum. Excuse me, I almost missed her. I put it on the bottom because we're here at the beginning.
That's all right.
Yeah, this is H1351A14.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the A14 amendment.
Okay, the motion is before us. If you'd explain the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate Representative Hornstein and Representative Leaders willing to work with this, and Representative Morrow has been a big help as well. This amendment is something I thought we actually had done 2 years ago. I think it was 2 years ago or a year ago, 1 or 2 years ago. Essentially, it came to me, and Senator Sams and others have heard about it, but there was a provision where jet skis and some boats and other smaller items could be towed behind a camper or a third vehicle as it's defined in our statute. And the equestrian clubs and persons involved in going to horse shows and enjoying that hobby were ending up making double trips because they'd have to pull their buggy, which would be on a small trailer, or maybe some few bales of hay and some sacks of feed that they couldn't fit in their horse trailer. They would like to have pulled a smaller trailer behind, similar to the boats. And what we changed a year or two ago was that the third trailer could be equestrian equipment, but somewhere in the process, what happened, the middle vehicle or the first trailer you're pulling still was defined as having to be a semi-trailer or camper. And so they came to me this past winter and now, or actually in March at my town meetings, and others I think were hearing about it, and the second vehicle wasn't ever changed, so the state patrol was still enforcing the law that wouldn't allow them to pull this equestrian equipment behind their horse trailer. It had to be a camper that they were pulling. And so just to clarify the law, it doesn't. I haven't found anybody that's opposed to it. Representative Morrow has been a big help in trying to get this. And so this would just clarify that the first vehicle, or as we describe trailers in statute, it would be the second vehicle, the trailer behind your propelling vehicle, could be a horse trailer or something like that. The other issue, just so you're, there's no concern, this is a fifth wheel hitch. There was some concern initially about a ball hitch. That is not permitted as I understand it, and maybe if Mr. Burris is here from House Research, he could just verify that. Am I being accurate, Matt? Is he here or not?
Yes, he's coming forward.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrum, that's correct. This type of vehicle combination would require a kingpin assembly.
And so, essentially, Mr. Burris, is that pretty much covered? This language is needed so they can pull a horse trailer and the equestrian equipment in a chain, right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrum, yes, I would express it the same way.
Okay, and that fixes that issue, Mr. Chair, that Senator Sams and I worked on. I thought we had fixed a couple years ago, but with special sessions, it somehow got dropped in one of the bills.
Okay, the motion then is that H1351A14 be recommend. The motion is before us, and Representative Hornstein. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Representative Westman and I have had a conversation about this, as well as Representative Morrow, who has brought some of the similar provisions to the bill. It's fine, and I don't see any issues with it.
Okay, Representative Earhart.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. How does this affect the person that wants to have a camper and then in the back of that tow a boat? And somebody from Iowa wrote a couple of years ago, he couldn't come across the border. with both of them hanging on the back of his. How does this affect the...
Mr.
Chair, if the question's to me, I've actually asked for house research, but I don't think it affects it either way, and I think that combination would be permitted under current law. But, Matt, Mr. Burris, if you could...
Mr. Burris, do you know the answer to the question?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. Under current law, that combination, if the middle vehicle is a camper semi-trailer, then the third one of the things that can be towed as the third vehicle in this three-unit combination would be a boat that's towed on a trailer.
Representative Hurd, does that answer your question? Okay, any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Mariani, we are going to need to reconsider the amendment that you moved earlier today, and then we'll have, just so everybody knows what's happening, Mr. Burroughs did a technical amendment that accomplishes what you were trying to accomplish with that amendment, but there needs to be some language changes. So Representative Mariani would move that we reconsider the amendment H1351826.
So moved.
Okay, that motion is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Mariani, you want to move the technical amendment then? And then we'll just have the staff explain what...
Mr. Chair, I will move the technical amendment and ask for an explanation from staff.
Okay, and that's H1351835. Mr. Burroughs?
Mr. Chair and members, this amendment is technical, more or less, in nature. I'll get to the more or less part of that in a moment. There are essentially two changes. The first is to reinstate some language that was inadvertently removed from the omnibus because of a conflict of two different amendments that the committee has had passed this morning. So it reinstates part of the bail pay language regarding the permit fees, because that section of law had been deleted by another amendment. And that language is on page 1.26. The second change relates to the conditional effective date on passage of a gas tax increase. This is on page 4, starting on line 32. This changes the changes in this are first to clarify that the provisions for truck weight increases would be effective July 1st of 2007 if there's legislation relating to a gas tax increase. And this also clarifies which sections in the bill would be conditionally effective, because a previous amendment has removed a couple of the sections.
Okay. And procedurally, I got a little bit ahead of myself. Before we move this amendment, Representative Mariani, being that we reconsidered your motion, you needed to withdraw it then once we had reconsidered it, because it was before us. So you, I assume, withdraw your...
Sure, I would withdraw the H-26 amendment.
Okay, and then Representative Mariani again moves H-1351835 that staff just described. Any discussion on that amendment? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. That completes the amendments that I had. So Representative Leader renews his motion that House File 1351, the First Committee Engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion on that motion? Representative Grafferl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Hornstein. I want to thank you for what is not in this bill, and that is the expansion of the transit taxing district to include the entire seven-county metro area. And I did want to, I know that in the Senate that language is attached to multiple bills over there, and I just want to, on the record, state my strong opposition to that proposal. And while I understand that there's a reasonable argument to be made that the geographic tax that is being offered
should include certain second and third tier suburbs that are not in it. For my district, I believe my legislative district to be impacted more than any other district in the state, and specifically for those townships, Eureka Township, Scioto, all the way out to Ravenna, Randolph, there really is no need for them to be in that. And I want to thank you for that not being in there and ask that you continue to stay strong on that position through the conference committee process. Thank you. Okay, any further discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, real quickly, Representative Hornstein, there was the bill I had heard on the radio this morning about kids. You couldn't have an extra kid in the car if you were 19 or whatever. I didn't see that in this bill. Is that somewhere I can't find it, or it was in the Senate companion to this bill? I tried to find it, and I couldn't. I assume it's not in here.
Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert, it's not in here. We've never had a bill, I believe, introduced, or even if it was introduced, it wasn't heard in my committee, and so it's not in here. I don't anticipate this being any part of a House position unless we amend it on the floor, so it's not in the bill.
Thank you. Any further discussion?
Sure. Quick question, Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein. Anything to do with that primary seat belt in here or the Baby Huey car seat law up to age 8? Either of those provisions being changed?
Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrum, no car seat provisions.
All right. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein.
Thanks for your patience.
We'll now take up House File 1598, Representative Voley, Labor Agreements and Compensation Plans, ratified for Minnesota Law Enforcement Association, Minnesota Nurses Association, and the Office of Higher Education. Representative Tan had to step out for a bit. She asked that I simply make the motions for her. So the chair moves that the State Government Finance Division report for House File 1598, the first engrossment. Any discussion? Hearing none, then. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. And the stages, by the way, are passing out the Senate file that we just received, you said yesterday, or today, excuse me. The chair moves that Senate File 1073, the second engrossment, be recommended to pass and sent to the General Registrar, and then we will, is that in identical form to with what your bill is?
Yes, sir. Senate File 1073?
Yes.
Yes, sir. That's
an identical form. I assumed it would be, being that we're dealing with labor agreements. Okay, if you could explain the bill, Representative Lilly. And thank you for waiting for a good part of the day.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. I've been along for the ride since a little after 8 this morning, and I have Mr. Hubinger up in the crowd, the director of the Legislative Coordinating Commission, if you want some real wisdom, but I'll move ahead. I don't know if Mr. Solberg has a question here right away, or
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, I see there is one addition to the Senate, and that is the Public Employees Retirement Association director that's included in there. So I did flip the plane over. I put the House bill over, and there's some blank in the back there. Oh, and there's also some additional ones in the Senate as well. So I think that it's more inclusive is what I'm saying.
Yeah, so we need to pass the Senate version is yes. What we need to do. So, Representative Lilly, why don't you explain that these agreements have been reached. Yeah.
And I'll kind of go through the bill here quickly. What happened is in 2006, many of the contracts, state contracts, were ratified and signed and became, in effect. And what happened is some of them weren't finished. So this kind of wraps up the rest of them that weren't included. And so we have the contracts for the law enforcement folks. So this includes a highway patrol and troopers, and then Representative Cornish is going to be in here, the conservation officers, BCA folks, nurses are included in Subdivision 2. I'm sorry, that first part was Subdivision 1. Subdivision 3 has some higher education folks that are covered. Subdivision 4 has a some work on the increase for the director of gambling control board. And then Subdivision 5 and 6 covers some pay increases that were discussed at the Legislative Coordinating Commission and were approved. And that's for the Public Employees Retirement Association for the director. And for, on the page 2 then, that Representative Solberg might not have seen yet, was the Minnesota State Retirement System and for the director of that system, and then also the director of the TRA. So that's this was approved by the Legislative Coordinating Commission, and that's a bipartisan. Chris De La Forest was the past chair, and now, for the House members, and now we have Lanning and Hillstrom, De La Forest, Bingham, and myself. So I don't know if there's any questions beyond that. It should be pretty straightforward and not controversial, I hope.
Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We're going to deviate a little bit from the agenda. Representative
Mariani, Mr. Chair, member.
You're very welcome. Representative Mariani has a couple of bills that he's going to deal with before we take up the leader bill, mainly because he's got a conference committee coming up. So, Representative Mariani, if you could take then House File 1564. You're doing this on behalf of Representative Greiling. I guess she's the chief author, the Special Education Maintenance of Effort. Representative Mariani moves the K-12 Finance Division report for House File 1564. Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Mariani moves then that House File 1564 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Chair Carlson. I appreciate you jumping around here. The Representative Greiling is currently chairing the E-12 Conference Committee, so she has to do this since I had these other amendments, but I'm also scheduled to be there as well. So this is pretty simple language. 1564 basically allows the movement of funds to make sure that the state meets any maintenance of effort requirements required under federal law with special ed. That's pretty much it.
Okay, any discussion? Representative Rothwell?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mariani, just for clarifying, no fiscal impact?
Mr. Chair and Representative Rothwell, I don't believe so. No.
Okay, any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Mariani, then we've got House File 2245.
If there is a fiscal
impact. Representative Mariani moves the division report, the K-12 Finance Division report on House File 2245. Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Mariani moves that House File 2245 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. Representative Mariani.
Chair members, this is even simpler. This one removes obsolete references from the general ed revenue and corrects some, apparently there's been erroneous cross-references, so this is correction to that. So pretty straight up, simple.
Okay, any discussion?
No fiscal impact.
I'm wondering why it's in the Finance Committee. Is it because K-12 kind of ended up with it instead of the Policy Division, and it has to kind of go through here?
It ended up, it was originally referred here, and so okay. The rule of thumb, you know, where it has to go out the same way it came in. Any further discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. We now go to Representative Leader's bill dealing with the road sign replacement program. So Representative Leader moves the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Division report for House File 562, the first committee engrossment. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Leader, care to move the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, this deals with what we call the Township Sign Program, and we have an amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we need to first move the bill. So Representative Leader moves
excuse me.
House File 562, the first committee engrossment. We recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. So, Representative Leader, you want to move the amendment?
He didn't hear you.
Oh, Representative Leader, you said you had an amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move Amendment 80562A1.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion on the amendment? Representative Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, actually this bill deals with the Township Sign Program, and that basically provides some matching monies for federal highway monies, which the Township gets. It's a program that's been underway, but what this would allow is to get an increase of the matching portion would increase the federal funds. But the amendment, because of our target, Mr. Chair, we have to reduce the amount in the bill from $2 million to $600,000 because that's the amount we could take in our target. And basically that affects the matching monies that we propose they can get. They will get matching monies based on the amount that they get in state funds to some degree up to a limit.
Any discussion on the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Leader.
Excuse me, we need to, is there discussion on the, I misspoke, any discussion on the amendment?
Yes.
Just on the amendment. Okay, Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Leader. Does this, you say that there's matching federal dollars for this particular program? Is that, so if we are taking it from $2 million down to $600,000, then we get an additional $600,000 from the federal on this, and then are we going to be foregoing the other $1.4 million on federal dollars if we don't fully fund this?
Mr. Chair and Representative Severson, it's kind of a dual answer. It definitely reduces the amount we potentially could get, but there's also the potential if you had more state monies, based on the federal highway bill that's coming in. I could have from the Township Association testify to that fact.
Okay, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kent Sewell with the Minnesota Association of Townships. Representative Severson, to your question, a year ago, Senator Mark Dayton secured in the federal appropriations transportation finance bill $3 million targeted for this program. It's an 80-20 match, so the Fed will provide 80%. We need to come up with a 20% match. So $600,000 that's in the amendment will allow us to match the money that's in hand. Currently pending, not yet acted on, but currently pending, Representative Tim Walz, at the request of Chairman Oberstar, has put in an additional supplemental funding request for an additional $9 million. If we were to receive that additional $9 million, we'd need an additional 1.8 of match. We don't know when we'll hear back, but what we've been trying to do is secure the match for the funds in hand and then have additional funds to help continue to leverage the argument in Washington to provide us the additional federal funding. So that the amendment matches what we have in hand. The original bill would have allowed us to leverage additional monies from the feds.
Any further discussion on the amendment? All those in favor then signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to remove my motion that House File 562, the first engrossment as amended, be recommended to pass and sent. I believe it stays in the Finance Committee.
It goes to the Ways and Means. Any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you. Take care of everything. Right.
With that, we're done, but we do reconvene tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., so meeting adjourned.